Welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. My guest this week, talking to us from his office in Frankfurt, is Mayor Chris McBarnes. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon to you, sir.
Stan, good afternoon, all your listeners. It's a pleasure to be on your show today. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you as well. And thanks for being with us. If you're listening to us here on WBAA News, if you have a question for Mayor McBarnes over our next half hour, please do give us a call. Our telephone number is 765-496-1999, 765-496-1999. You can also send an email to ask@WBAA.org, or you can tweet your questions to @WBAA News on Twitter. Well, shortly after you and I spoke last month about your plans to demolish some blighted buildings and try to rehabilitate some others, the state actually, interestingly, announced another round of funding to cities like yours that are trying to do exactly what you're trying to do. I wondered, and I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this yet, is Frankfurt getting any of that blight remediation money?
We are looking into the blight elimination program, Stan, that the state is offering right now. Obviously, you know, we don't want to go around and demolate a great number of homes in our community, structures in general. We'd love to see those homes rehabbed. We did start a hearing authority, and I had the pleasure of talking to you about this right out of the gates. We've issued about 20 letters so far to individuals that own properties around the city of perceived violation of the Indiana Unsafe Building Code. I'm proud to say that out of those 20 letters that have been sent out, 17 of those individuals have come into our building inspector and worked out a maintenance program to bring those properties back to the expectations that we have as a community directly correlated with the unsafe building law. Unfortunately, we are having to move forward with one demolition on 455 East Washington Street. The structure is beyond repair, and it's providing an unsafe atmosphere for the people within that neighborhood. That being said, we started our own unsafe building fund in the city. This year we have $75,000 budgeted in that line item. It's a healthy line item, and we're utilizing it to demolate this particular property on Washington Street. But I'm glad that the state recognizes that local governments do need these injections of cash funds to truly enhance neighborhoods and bring about that neighborhood revitalization, and that's why we're looking into that heavily at this time.
Tell me about the process that led to deciding to knock down this first building. You had said a couple months ago that you thought this was essentially a last resort.
It really is, Stan. It really is. We have a lot of historic homes in our city that have that great mid-1900th century architecture, and we want to preserve that because that makes our community unique. The great thing about our hearing authority is it's a completely transparent process. So what happens is we send out those letters to the property owners. They have 10 days to get back with us. If they don't, we send out another piece of mail certified letting them know that we are requesting they come before the hearing authority for an official hearing on that property and the violations that we have perceived. In this instance, the property owner chose to bring legal counsel with herself. So they came before the public in a public meeting. Media is welcome to come to these meetings. They're published in our newspaper. We normally hold them, if we have to have one, on the second or fourth Monday of the month. At that time, it turns into a trial-type setting. The Board of Works and I make up the hearing authority. Our building inspector and city attorney presents evidence to the hearing authority, pictures of the violations. In this instance, we had a roof that was collapsing. We had noxious weeds around the property that were causing a severe issue with varmints, and the foundation was truly crumbling on this property. It was vacant. The property owner had no problem with us moving forward with demolition. Obviously, we would have liked to have seen him do that, but instead of issuing a citation, we felt as though it was important to the city that we move forward in utilizing the unsafe building fund. So we put that out for public bid, that demolition process. Those come back before the Board of Works this coming Monday, and then demolition of that home on this property will take place.
So when you've got somebody like this in front of you, it is clear what your position is as the city, and it would seem like it's incumbent upon them to sort of change your mind. But I could also see where they would think about this as you guys, you know, obviously having an opinion, not being necessarily an unbiased group to try the case, as you put it. How do you overcome what might be seen as that sort of unequal footing to start?
Sure, and that's a great question, Stan, and it's a case-by-case basis, and that's why I love the fact that these meetings are open to the public. They can come in and truly perceive what individuals are doing with their property, because in a small community like this, accountability is big. We walk past the individuals each and every single day that we affect, no matter whether it be the mayor of the city or someone that lives on Main Street. In this particular case, the gentleman that owned this property had fallen into bankruptcy, fallen onto very hard times. We believe by no fault of his own was this property deteriorating. He just simply did not have the funds at this time to rejuvenate it. It wasn't a realistic expectation. The board could have moved forward with a civil fine and forced him to demolish this property, but we thought in this instance, because it was posing a severe hazard to the neighborhood, children were playing around that house, heaven forbid something were to happen to them, so we thought, you know what, this is a good case where we should use that unsafe building fund, take it down. And then there's also multiple properties around this particular property that individuals have invested a lot of money into their homes. So we also take them into consideration and say, you know what, maybe we can stabilize their property values by strategically taking this certain property to the ground. So that's how that decision was reached. And moving forward, it will be a case-by-case basis, dependent upon objective facts.
So what becomes of the homeowner and his living situation?
Sure. So this particular homeowner, this was a rental situation. So he was a landlord. He owns multiple properties in the city, does not reside in our community. So, of course, I do not know his private situation, but us taking down this particular property doesn't put him out of a home. It was a home that long ago he rented to individuals.
What about some of the other homeowners whom you've notified with letters? How are you working with those people?
Sure. So I'll hearken back to the fact that 17 out of the 20 individuals have worked with us very well, and that's what we like to see. So no one has been affected in terms of not having housing. This hasn't gotten to that point yet. We do have two other individuals that my building inspector notified me of yesterday, but those facts have not come before the hearing authority. Again, you know, a case-by-case basis, we will work with these individuals. By no means do we want to put anybody out on the street, but at the same time, I do feel it incumbent upon us to make sure that individuals are living in safe environments and in a safe atmosphere, especially if they were renting that property from a landlord that unfortunately at times in the world that we live in may not have their best interest at heart.
So are you saying you might have two more cases that could come before your hearing authority here in the recent future?
Yes, sir. Probably in the next month. And again, we publish those meetings in the paper. Those meeting notices are sent out to media. So we encourage individuals to come, be a part of the process, and hear the facts that the board is hearing.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We're talking with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes this week. We'd love to have your phone calls. Call us at 496-1999. You can also email questions to ask@WBAA.org or tweet questions to @WBAAnews on Twitter. You and I talked last month also about NDOT's plan to rehab State Road 28 leading into town there, and you said you thought it was on the near horizon. How quickly do you think that that construction is going to get started in earnest?
Thanks for asking that question, Stan. I'll tell you what, State Road 28 West coming into our community, it's absolutely deplorable. It's an embarrassment for our community. It affects our constituents each and every single day. I know because I get those calls. I hear about it on Facebook. So, you know, we provided as much advocacy as possible, everything from driving state legislators up and down that road to talking to NDOT almost every single day. I'm proud to say that actually right after I get off the phone with you, my street superintendent and I are actually heading to Crawfordsville. That's our district headquarter of NDOT, and we'll be meeting with contractors today in a pre-construction meeting for the resurfacing, regrading, and repaving of State Road 28 West, starting at about where the NDOT garage sets as you come into the community all the way to Clay Street. Individuals that live in Clinton County will know exactly where I'm talking about. That's the most deplorable set of roadway. I believe the RFP that NDOT put out for this project states that contractors must be done by November 25th through the 27th, right in there. But like I said, our street superintendent and I, although it's not a necessity that we go to this meeting today, I want to be there to continue to hold NDOT's feet to the fire and to let the construction individuals know how important this project is for our community. I also just solidified a contract with CSX because there is a railroad crossing that also crosses this portion of state highways you come into our community. And again, it's not our infrastructure, but it affects our constituents. horn. So I've been on the horn with CSX, have worked with the city council, and we are partnering with NDOT to rebuild those railroad tracks as well. So we hope these projects will happen concurrently in the next month. Citizens can expect probably to see the resurfacing of this roadway begin in the next 2 weeks, and that way going into the winter we'll have a nice smooth process for the constituents to enjoy. But we're not going to stop there, Stan, because I believe the repaving of the road won't hold long. It's a band-aid to get us by for the next 2 years, but we need to continue to work with NDOT. I believe by the year 2017, they need to come in and look at tearing out this portion of State Highway and rebuilding it completely. And we're not going to rest until we see that happen.
What would that do to people trying to get into your community, especially if your plan to get more businesses between the downtown and Interstate 65 along that corridor there that I think you have sort of envisioned as a business-friendly corridor along State Road 28? If you've got that road torn up, at least in the near term, does that affect your pitch to businesses who you're saying, hey, please come locate along this road, but it's going to be awful hard for them to get between downtown and the interstate, I would think?
Sure. That's an astute question. I'll tell you, right now it's harder to sell to businesses why a piece of infrastructure of this magnitude is in the state it's in. I believe the way it sets right now is costing us jobs. I can work with businesses on the congestion that will happen maybe over a year time span in 2017. We'll work diligently with NDOT to reroute trucks for that small amount of time, but for the long-term sustainability of Frankfort and economic development, that roadway needs to be rebuilt. Economic development, it's so competitive nowadays. People aren't just looking for low utility rates and a good workforce. If they come into your community and they're driving over a road that they know is not stable, another community is going to get the nod. I know that. I want to keep us competitive, and that's why when it gets fixed, I'm concerned about it getting fixed right so the long-term success of Frankfort is truly viable.
Back to the housing question for a second. We've just had a phone call from someone who wants to know what happens after the city tears down a structure. More specifically, does the homeowner retain the land that blighted structure was on, or does the city get to take over that parcel?
That's a good question. This particular case on East Washington Street, that is a tax delinquent property. So actually on October 1st, in commissioner's sale, that property will go up for sale. So individuals that are interested in coming into Frankfort and developing some type of a housing situation, maybe for themselves or maybe build to sell, they can purchase these properties that are vacant in commissioner sales. Other situations, if an individual is not tax delinquent, when the house comes down, those liens are put against the property. So to retain complete ownership, those liens must be met. But as a guessing man right now, looking at situations long term, I have to believe that most of these properties will be tax delinquent. So keep your eye out for commissioner sales because those properties could be bought for a relatively low amount of money.
But if somebody was current on their property taxes, they would retain the land?
Correct, but liens would be put against the property.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Craig, there. We appreciate your calls. If you have a question for Mayor Chris McBarnes of Frankfort today, you too can call in at 496-1999. Tweet your questions also to @WBAANews on Twitter. A couple weeks ago, speaking of the business investment, Wabash National announced it would invest a couple $1 million in its Frankfort operation. What's interesting there is that they expect that money, that $2 million, to create as many as 100 new jobs. And I see a lot of these job announcements come across my desk over the course of a month. And normally, well-paying jobs tend to come with a lot more capital investment than that. I wondered what conversations you had with the Wabash National folks about what kind of positions these are, whether they're high-paying jobs, whether they're kind of middle-income jobs. What can you tell me about those?
Sure, absolutely. Great question, Stan. So we are happy to welcome Wabash National to our community. Along with ConAgra and Indiana Packers, we've made some great jobs announcements in the past 5 months in our city. I believe it shows that Frankfort's open for business. You know, Wabash National has a very aggressive timeline, and I think that their investment lines up with the facility that they purchased. They are not coming into the community and building a new building. They're actually coming in to our community, and they're inhabiting an existing building that stands on West Morrison Street. The docking bays, the building itself is in really good shape, so the capital investments in the short term should be moderate for them. I will tell you that you're correct. By 2019, Wabash National expects to create 120 jobs in our community. When we have tax abatement hearings with industries, you know, we take that very seriously because we not only want jobs coming into the community, but we want jobs that are good paying jobs with good benefits that can help support and sustain Frankfort families. In this particular expansion in Wabash National diversifying their portfolio, Stan, they'll be making products that include semi-trailer aerodynamic products, mobile storage containers, mobile offices, and cargo trailers. The average salary wage for employees working in this facility will be around $15.46 an hour, and that paired with a great benefit package that Wabash National is known to give their associates, we believe these are great jobs. So, and the jobs in the facility itself will include manufacturing supervisors, various hourly associate positions, including welders, assemblers, machine operators, skilled maintenance, and coordinators, along with manufacturing engineers. So we're talking about good jobs here and another great corporate partner in our community.
I'm glad you mentioned the idea of negotiating, especially around tax abatements and other incentives that the city can give when a company wants to come in and locate there. What kind of conversations do you have with people? In other words, what sort of position are you in to ask something of somebody? Because you and I have talked on this program about your want to create that sort of business corridor leading out toward the interstate, and you've basically said, and you've exactly said, Frankfort is open for business. Come give us your business. And so you have said, look, we could really use your investment. And it's no secret that your community is not a well-to-do community. You're trying to build yourself up. So businesses are smart. They, I think, are going to see that this is the case economically. So when a business comes in, I'm wondering who has the edge in bargaining? You, because you've got the tax incentives you can give them, or the businesses who know that you need them?
Great question, Stan. You know, I think it's important to keep in mind what the city of Frankfort is, and that's a growing, diversified industrial community. You know, we have the largest contiguous industrial park in the state of Indiana. The largest Frito-Lay in the world sits in the city of Frankfort, Indiana. We have low, reliable utility rates. Our utilities are owned by our municipality. We have an Ivy Tech downtown now that services now more than 200 students, so we do have a developed workforce. So we're not just a one-horse town anymore. Frankfort's a new story. We have a new beginning. When industries come in, they look at all these components, but it is a two-way street, because if we're talking about a tax increment financing deal or a traditional tax abatement deal, it's a two-way street. We want to know that those jobs are going to sustain Frankfort families, that they're good-paying jobs. But I believe that our industrial base is such, and the announcements that we've made in the past 5 months with ConAgra, Indiana Packers, and now Wabash National puts us in a place that we can be a little more picky, that we're only accepting the cream of the crop. You know, we had one of the biggest site selectors in the nation come to our community last week. The IDC is pushing more projects to the city of Frankfort because they see that we can get deals done and that we do it professionally and that we do it the right way. That being said, we're constantly trying to learn. Another thing that we market for the city of Frankfort is we own our own fiber optics utility. So telecommunications and connectivity to the World Wide Web, we can give industry that at very competitive rates. So we have set ourselves up to have a good foundation of growth in the future when it comes to a diverse set of incentives, good workforce, low cost and reliable utilities, and we're seeing that story and that marketing of our community come to life with these big jobs announcements over the past months.
So it sounds like you're not as worried about giving out tax incentives to companies because you realize that some of the money you give out, you're going to get back by hooking them up to your utilities, hooking them up to your telecom network, and you're going to sort of get that back little by little in a number of different ways.
That's a very astute observation, absolutely. You know, the utilities would not have had that customer. And in the world that we live in today, tax incentives and tax increment financing deals, they're just a reality because every community in this economy is out there competing for jobs for their citizens. And if you don't have that toolbox of incentives to draw from, you're unfortunately behind the times. Coming into office in 2012, I had no redevelopment commission. I had no economic development plan. And I knew it was so important that we put those on the forefront, not that we're going to use TIF for every single deal. It may be right for some deals. It may not be right for other deals. And we do have to keep tax revenue in mind when we bring these industries in because we have to give them the services they expect. But now at least we can let industry know that we're here to play ball, that we can step up and we can be relevant with our competition that's around us on this I-65 corridor. Frankfurt's going to continue to grow. 20 years from now, when I'm here raising my kids, I guarantee you we'll be looking at a different city, and that's because of the foundation that we've laid right now.
We've got just a few more minutes left with Frankfurt Mayor Chris McBarnes on today's Ask the Mayor program here on WBAA. Give us a call at 496-1999. Tweet your questions to at WBAA News on Twitter. You mentioned that you think that your bargaining position has improved somewhat since you've had these investments over the last couple of months. I wonder what, if anything, would be a bridge too far for some company to ask of you. Is there something that a big corporation comes in and says, Mr. Mayor, we need this, we need incentive X from you, and you would back off and say, no, that's something we absolutely can't do?
Good question, Stan. You know, the biggest thing that worries me when an industry comes in is not the tax abatement or the TIF revenue. You know, we can work deals with them to make it viable for them to come to our community. But just like with ConAgra, maybe perhaps they need a large piece of infrastructure. In ConAgra's own accord, we needed to build a new road for them that bridged State Road 28 to County Road 0 to get the 350 trucks that will be coming in and out of this facility on a daily basis carrying the products that they needed. That was a big mousetrap for the city of Frankfurt to work through. But here's how we accomplished that. Here's how we turned what could have been a negative into a positive. Our relationships with Clinton County, our commissioners, our county council, our economic development director in the county have made our pool of resources so much larger. In that instance, what wouldn't have been possible for the city of Frankfurt to accomplish alone, building a $3.5 million roadway on top of giving tax incentives to draw this Fortune 500 company into our community, I was able to work with county council members, county commissioners to show them how ConAgra wouldn't only benefit the city of Frankfurt in an economic development sense, but our county as a whole. Pooled a deal with them that involved edit funds and TIF funds over the next 20 years to build that roadway for ConAgra. And not only are we building that for them, but we're building it for them in a relatively short time frame, 13 months. So I believe that this shows outside entities the cooperation and the dynamics that are here in our community when it comes to unity and communications, and we can truly get done what we have to get done to bring good jobs to Clinton County.
Obviously, cities of any size, whether they be your size or the size of Indianapolis, have to be careful about how many different tax incentives and how much money they give out simultaneously. I wonder if you feel like you're able to grow at the speed you would like, especially in terms of getting more businesses into the community, because you have several of these investments going on at once, and you have to look at your near-term balance sheet, because obviously these investments affect revenue that would come into you in the near term with the promise of additional revenue in the long term.
Absolutely, Stan. And that's why relationships with county officials are not only important, but state and national officials. You know, there's great grants out there, and some people say, you know, grants, you know, what's that? But if dollars are being given out to communities for economic development, I want Frankfurt to be on the forefront of those grant opportunities. So take the ConAgra deal, for example. We would not have been able to get that deal done, not only with the partnership of Clinton County, but because our administration had great relationships and good accord with the IEDC and our governor's office, Governor Pence and the IEDC stepped in. They saw the worth of ConAgra staying in the state of Indiana, and they worked with us on industrial development grant funding to help build the roadway and the infrastructure that ConAgra needs. And I thank them for that vision and their leadership and partnering with our city to provide a source of revenue that we would not have been able to meet had it not been for their help and leadership.
You've mentioned the IEDC a couple of times. What sorts of conversations have you had with them that lead you to believe, as you say, that they are pushing additional businesses to look at Frankfurt where perhaps those businesses might not have before?
Sure. So anytime I can, Stan, I get down to Indianapolis and I get in front of the IEDC. Chief of Staff, Chad Pittman, President of the IEDC, Eric Dowden. Again, you know, they recognize what we can get done in our city. I've had multiple private conversations with them. They understand that Frankfort's on the cutting edge, not only when it comes to incentives and utilities, but also how we're growing our local workforce and leveraging our key location off of I-65 and the fact that we have a municipal county airport in our community. They know the story of Frankfort. They get approached with deals every single day from not only all across the nation but the world, and now that Frankfort is on the IEDC's radar, we're getting more deals pushed our way, and it allows us to stay competitive. And as we grow in the coming years, we're going to learn with the IEDC, we're going to learn from them, we're going to create shovel-ready sites, and we're going to grow our city to the interstate.
In just our last couple of minutes here, your St. Vincent Hospital location there is one of several in the state that's restricting its visitors due to the strain of enterovirus that's gone throughout the country and through a number of states in the Midwest here. I wonder, how does your city prepare for a possible health situation like that where you've got a communicable disease that can affect different pockets of the population, not necessarily the entire population? What do you do to prepare for something like that?
Sure. Great question, Stan. And my mother's a nurse at St. Vincent, so we've had this conversation a lot. And that's where we really lean on the partnerships with our emergency management agency and Daryl Sanders here in our community. We've got one of the best EMAs in the state. Over the past several years, we have invested in also a key location. That's our central dispatch location, which gives leaders in this community a cutting-edge location to communicate and divvy out the resources that we would need in a crisis such as that. We've also developed between our public safety agencies relationships with District 4, which connects us with public safety agencies and healthcare services from around the state. So should an emergency such as a healthcare crisis happen in our community, we have resources to pull from to ensure that our citizens are taken care of. The American Red Cross and Christina Chapman are also wonderful, and we work with them on long-term planning in terms of where we house individuals that may need to be quarantined. So although you cannot prepare truly for a tragedy like that, we do everything we can to run mock disaster drills with those different agencies, know what resources we have to pull from so that we can always ensure that our citizens are taken care of to the best of our ability.
In just our last 90 seconds or so, do you have a plan written out somewhere that says if there is a widespread disease outbreak, this is what the city of Frankfort and its citizens should do?
Sure. So through our EMA office, Stan, there are written out plans for that. I must admit that a lot of the times we prepare for natural disasters such as a tornado or something of this nature. So that is something that we will continue to approach with our team in the days and weeks to come. That is something that should be on the forefront of our minds to ensure the safety of our citizens.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, we have unfortunately run out of time for this month's program. Thanks for being with us. We look forward to doing it again a month from now.
I appreciate it, Stan. Wishing you a great day.
Same to you. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. If you've ever got a question for one of our mayors, you can email it to ask@WBAA.org. Our Twitter is always available for your use. @WBAA News is our handle. And you can, of course, call in during the shows to talk to any of our mayors. Be with us at this time next week. We'll have our monthly chat with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Until then, I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Have a nice day.